is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Friday, April 14th, 2017. We're just going to preview the Clippers versus Jazz series today because game one is tomorrow night. So we actually have a little bit of a special episode today. I had a nice conversation with David Locke, the guy who the Locked On Podcast Network is actually named after. He's the radio announcer for the Utah Jazz, and he does the Locked On Jazz podcast. So I had a nice conversation with him. That's going to make up most of our episode. And then I'm going to loop back in at the end just to give my picks for the different Western Conference playoff series, kind of like how I ran through the Eastern Conference playoff series in yesterday's episode. Next week, we'll be back with a full slate of episodes talking about this Clippers-Jazz series. And then on Thursday, when we actually have an off game in this series, I'm hoping I'm going to be able to have Adam Mares from Denver Stiffs and the Locked On Nuggets podcast on the show just to talk about his take on the Clippers-Jazz series up to that point. It'll be between games 2 and 3. And then the other playoff series going around the league, because Adam's a really bright guy. He kind of has a good knowledge of the entire league, not just of his team or of a specific series that he's keeping an eye on. So right now I'm going to loop you in to that conversation that I had with David Locke from Locked On Jazz. And then I'll loop back in at the end of that and talk a little bit about the playoff matchups.
I'm David Locke, Locked On Jazz.
And I'm Lucas Hand, Locked On Clippers.
All right, so Lucas, as we get ready for this, what Clipper team is it? The first 20 games, the last 15 games, or the middle?
Well, that's what's been crazy is, as I'm looking at the numbers, kind of getting ready to preview the series, the Clippers, in their first 16 games, had a point differential of plus 13. And in their last 13 games, again, plus 13. The 53 in the middle, negative one, and they finished 26 and 27 in those 53 games. I think we're getting that good Clippers team, and that doesn't mean that they're invincible, but you look at the way that they were able to get healthy and kind of really get the ball rolling and the fact that they're playing hot right now, I think that we're going to see more towards the good Clippers team and not kind of the lethargic, beat-up team we saw in the middle. But it's been a similar story with the Jazz, I think, even though the difference isn't as pronounced in the stages of the season as it is with the Clippers. It's almost like you see different teams with Utah over the last couple of years because they've struggled to keep their guys on the floor, but when they're healthy, they've been very, very good.
It's an interesting series. I think it's two teams that are much better than anyone realizes. I mean, that's really – I think the Clippers may be the second or best team in the West, and the Jazz actually may be the third. I think both these teams, when right, are as good, if not better, than both San Antonio and Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers definitely – you know, you can just look at it very simply. The Clippers finished 4 games behind the Jazz. They played 10 games without both Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Or, I'm sorry, the Clippers finished 4 games behind the Rockets. 10 games without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. They lost 7 of them, including games to Dallas, the Lakers, Denver, Minnesota, and then Denver a second time. So those are your 5 games right there. If Chris Paul and Blake Griffin play, 5 lottery teams that put you above the Houston Rockets. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think that these teams, you know, are better than people think, and I think it's kind of unfortunate, really, that whoever wins this series is going to have to play the Golden State Warriors in the second round, because these are two teams that really could have a playoff run if the matchups fell the right way. Unfortunately, they kind of got stuck in the same side of the bracket with a juggernaut.
So the Jazz have found a lineup that's been good for them. Joe Johnson at the 4, with Rudy Gobert, and then some combination of George Hill, Rodney Hood, Gordon Hayward, and Joe Ingles. So you have 4 40% three-point shooters with Rudy Gobert. What do the Clippers – Blake Griffin then becomes kind of interesting because he's got to go out and guard Joe Johnson. though he's obviously a much better player than Joe Johnson. What has happened to the Clippers when teams have done that and gone four wide with four good shooters?
Well, we've seen the results really vary. You know, Blake Griffin, when he first came into the league, there was actually talk that if the Clippers went big, he could play small forward at times because he's so athletic. His lateral quickness, because he's been playing power forward his whole career, hasn't come along to the point where you would really consider him a viable option at small forward. But in certain lineups, when you've got guys, especially guys who aren't on the quick end of things like Joe Ingles or an aging Joe Johnson, Blake's comfortable in those matchups. The Clippers will even keep Blake Griffin out on the floor. For example, when they play the Warriors and Steve Kerr decides to put Kevin Durant at power forward, the Clippers will leave Blake out in that matchup and feel comfortable with it. And even at times down the stretch of big games, they'll use him as a primary defender against guys like LeBron and Durant. So it doesn't totally wreck the Clippers defensively. I think the biggest issue for them when you space the floor is that DeAndre Jordan is a very energetic overhelper. And one of the biggest trends you'll see is that when the Clippers defense collapses, it tends to be because DeAndre Jordan helps and no one covers his man for him. When the floor is that spaced around the centers, it makes it that much harder for a guy like J.J. Redick, who's an undersized wing, to make that guard drop and box out whoever the other center is. In this case, it's Rudy Gobert, who's one of the biggest, most athletic guys out there.
It's interesting, really interesting. So I don't have any I've called the four games, right? I've got that the Clippers have outplayed the Jazz. There is one, and it surprised me a little bit, I'll be honest, Lucas, because there's an aspect to this series where I feel like the Jazz have a matchup advantage, and they haven't been able to exploit it at all. And what that is I feel like when you have George Hill, Rodney Hood, Joe Ingles, or Gordon Hayward on the floor, you've got three different guys that can all create off the pick and roll and get things going. And so that if you have Jamal Crawford on the floor or you have Raymond Felton on the floor, the Jazz should be able to zero in on that guy and take advantage of his lack of defensive prowess, almost forcing you to keep Emba Mute on the floor while they're awesome. And maybe that's the issue. They're awesome when he's on the floor with their starters. So maybe it's not actually an advantage. But you would think that it takes away your floor spacing. And that just hasn't worked out. Have they avoided that with everyone? Is it because they are just so good with Emba Mute and the starters, it doesn't matter? Or why? Or is that something the Jazz should be able to exploit at some point?
Well, we've seen teams over the last 5 years when Jamal has been on the Clippers really zero in on him and, like you said, isolate him and take advantage of him. One thing that I think has been maybe not talked about this season, because he's obviously just a backup point guard, is that Raymond Felton has quietly been one of the Clippers' better defenders. So I don't think he's a guy you really want to attack. He's been really, really solid. The only thing that limits him is his foot speed. But as far as pick and roll coverages, he's a guy you really trust. And Austin Rivers, when he's engaged and not focusing too much on offense, is a plus defender too. So what you have, when the Clippers bring out that three-guard bench unit with Felton, Rivers, and Crawford, you tend to not play against teams that have three pick-and-roll ball handlers on the bench. And so if Utah can put those lineups out there against the Clippers and simply feed the ball to whoever Jamal is guarding, maybe they'll be able to take advantage of it. But it seems that any time that someone is out there who, you know, you aren't super worried about as a pick-and-roll distributor, or is maybe even out there with a guy that you aren't really worried about as an amazing finisher on the other end, you hide Jamal in that matchup and you normally get away with it. But that's definitely something that we've seen be a big weakness for the Clippers in recent years, that Jamal Crawford, who Doc Rivers leans on so heavily as a crutch, is just a really, really big weakness on the defensive end.
And the other thing is Jamal Crawford has not been very good for a few years. So that I think gets to be interesting on this as well. Where are the areas where you think the Clippers are either superior and have a significant edge, or maybe you're concerned about?
Well, I think the real battle to watch in this series is going to be between DeAndre Jordan and Rudy Gobert. Because we've seen so many different DeAndre Jordans over the course of the season. you know, there was a stretch of games in December where Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both injured. The Clippers were losing to lottery teams. And DeAndre Jordan, first of all, was disengaged during the games when these were maybe games when you'd think he'd try to take over and put up like a 20-20 line. Instead, he became very disengaged when the team was losing. He would not show up for press conferences. We'd be sitting there in the press room, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes after the last guy came in, and then finally someone would come and say, DJ went home, he's not talking to reporters tonight. So on the flip side, we've seen games where he's putting up 20 and 20. You know, in the last game of the season against the Kings, he was everywhere on both ends of the floor. And obviously we all know what Rudy Gobert can do. If DeAndre Jordan is playing at his best, that matchup is going to be very tight. They'll have games where they're even. Maybe DJ's a little better in one game, Gobert's a little better in the other game. I think if DeAndre plays Gobert that closely, the Jazz start running out of areas where they have clear advantages over the Clippers. But if Gobert can really establish superiority in that matchup, the rest of the Jazz have a whole lot less that they need to do. Because obviously you look at the small forward position with Gordon Hayward as a big, you know, W for the Jazz. They're better there. Whoever Gordon Hayward's matched up against, he's going to be better then. But the Clippers have big advantages with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And Gobert is where the Jazz can start to swing that back. If the Clippers can play that matchup even, I think it gets very, very hard for Utah to start finding the production other spaces on the floor to make up for that disparity with Paul and Griffin.
I mean, the Jazz haven't been able to score against them, right? I mean, they did one night, but I mean, two of the Jazz worst defensive ratings or offensive ratings all night, all year long, two of them are against the Clippers. You know, they put up
that 75-point game
right,
and a 72-point game.
Right. I mean, they just couldn't score. Now, Gordon Hayward didn't play in one of them. What's interesting when you look at them is the Jazz couldn't get threes. So the Jazz went 7 of 19 in the first one and 4 of 23 in the second. The Jazz averaged 26 three attempts a game in against the Clippers. They have not been able to get the three off. So the Clippers are clearly running the Jazz off the line, not giving I have a note. I have a lot of notes at this point, but I have a note that Rodney Hood, here you go, only 4 of his 30 shots against the Clippers so far this year have been catch and shoots. So
yeah, I think we talked earlier about Jamal Crawford, how he's, you know, you mentioned that he hasn't been very good in the playoffs. I think Rodney Hood might be the kind of guy that could have a very disappointing postseason for the Jazz, even though he's been a good scorer for them, because these are the kind of guys that we tend to see underperform in the playoffs. And I think in the same sense that we're kind of used to Jamal Crawford having the worst playoffs in regular season, Rodney Hood is a guy that I kind of have my eye on. Yeah, if he gets really hot, he can swing a game and potentially even swing a series. But over a larger sample size, I'd expect him to actually, with his efficiency levels, to struggle in the postseason.
So here's as we begin to wrap this up, and you guys can follow Lucas on Locked On Clippers all week, or if you already do, then because I'm talking Locked On Clippers people, you can follow me on Locked On Jazz. Here's what's interesting that I don't think's been talked about yet. In the games in which the Clippers beat the Jazz, the Clippers didn't score. So the Clippers' offensive ratings in the four games against the Jazz, and for those who don't follow offensive rating, the league average is about 104. I haven't done my notes, but I'm guessing the Clippers are probably about 109 for the year. Is that about right? I think that's...
Yeah, the Clippers are at... Oh, they're at 113, actually.
Oh, for the whole season. Are you using Basketball Reference or using NBA?
Yeah, Basketball Reference.
So it's a little lower on the... I'm using NBA, which is a little lower, but...
Okay.
So but let's call it 110, just to be nice and round. First game, they were 97. Second game, they were 95. Then they were 118 in the loss, and they were 113 in the fourth game. So in two of the four games, the Clippers didn't score either, which I think gets interesting
yeah.
to this series.
And I think that kind of goes to show a little bit of Utah's style, because you know, the Jazz play at the slowest pace of anyone in the league, which is something that's interesting because you hear people talk about, you know, a young team getting to the playoffs, how are they going to deal when the pace and physicality changes? Well, Utah already plays at the slowest pace of anyone in the league. But their weakness has to be the offense. you know, only 12th in offensive rating average, and a lot of that is Gordon Hayward based. I think one thing that maybe could change that from what we saw in some of those regular season games is the health of George Hill. Might revitalize Utah's offense a little bit and add another really impressive dimension that gives the Clippers trouble. But the Clippers, for all their offensive prowess, have actually been a very good defensive team under Doc Rivers. They had this slump in the middle of this season that kind of tanked this season's defensive rating. But when they've been engaged at the beginning and ends, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they've been very good defensively. And in those first 16 games when the Clippers were 14-2, they were the best defensive team in the NBA. And they haven't been as good at the close, but they've still been very good. So what you have, I think the difference between these two teams is the Clippers have that kind of experience and balance where they can win games in a lot of different ways. The Clippers can win games 125 to 118, but they can also win gritty playoff games 88 to 82. And we know that the Jazz can win when the pace is slow and their defense is taking over, but the Clippers might be right at that level with them as far as a gritty defensive team. And then when the pace changes, I really think Utah struggles to keep up with them in the higher scoring games.
And, you know, that's Doc Rivers has said, we're good with pace when we're playing with power. It doesn't mean necessarily up tempo, but if we slow down and start walking, we're not very good. That's when Chris Paul is just suddenly pounding and you have no movement. Should be interesting to see, you know, might be as simple as whether the Jazz can find a way to make those threes. The one game they won, they made 14 to 21. The three games they've lost, they've made 28%. So sometimes it gets into simply make or miss league. And when you're playing slow possession, half court games, it gets even more vital.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you see stuff like that swing series all the time. I think back to this current Clippers group, their first playoff series, kind of in a similar position to the one that Utah's in now, where they were down big in that fourth quarter of game one. You might even remember this game. And Nick Young hit three straight threes from the right corner against the Grizzlies. And the Clippers came back and won that game at the buzzer. And it was one of the biggest comebacks in NBA playoff history. And it just kind of opened the floodgates for hot shooting for them in that series. And, you know, a series can turn like that on momentum.
The last question I would have for you, I'm curious about, I think the question on our end is, you know, are we experienced enough? And the answer is probably no. I don't know, you know, can they get through it? We'll see. The question I have is what happens that would cause all the old scars to open back up with this team?
For the Clippers?
Yeah. I mean, right? I mean, there's a lot of this group is unique in the sense
it
has
a lot of baggage.
There's a lot of bad, mutually bad experiences together.
Yeah, I think it would have to come, you know, you see this a lot. Whenever the Clippers are up, they have a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, and a team starts to chip away, the Clippers get this look in their eyes, like, oh no, not again. Because especially with that game six against the Houston Rockets in the second round a couple years ago, where Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, of all people, started hitting threes from everywhere and came back and took that series away from the Clippers. They haven't quite psychologically gotten over that yet. They've struggled down the stretch of games. And like you said, they play worse when Chris Paul is pounding the ball. And it's always been a problem of his that when the Clippers have an 8-point lead with 4 minutes left, he's draining the clock instead of playing basketball.
Well, Luke,
if the Jazz if they can have a big comeback win, in games one or two, for example, if the Clippers are up 12 with 8 minutes left in game one and the Jazz get hot and come back, that's something that could break the Clippers.
Well, be interesting to see. Lucas, any final things you have for me? It's certainly going to be a good series, and we can chat hopefully Wednesday or Thursday before we do game three on Friday.
Yeah, I actually had one note here that I wanted to talk to you about. So I noticed, just looking through kind of simple box score stats about this series, that Utah is one of the worst assist teams in the NBA. So George Hill leads them in assists per game, only averaging 4.1, whereas the Clippers are way more top-heavy with Chris Paul 9.8 and then Blake Griffin is second at 4.9. But what was interesting to me is that just looking at the per-minute numbers on assists, Utah has a lot of balance. So they've actually got four guys averaging four or more assists per 36 minutes, and then three more at three. So to what extent do these kind of like secondary crafty passers, like, you know, a guy like Joe Inglis, a guy like Boris Diaw, who aren't going to have the ball in their hands all the time like you'd expect, you know, a point guard like Chris Paul to, what extent does that like add a dimension to Utah's offense that we don't really see with a lot of teams who don't have quality passers at those forward positions?
I think this, so this has been going on for like three, since Quinn Snyder took over, so it's definitely systematic. The Jazz will lead the league in passes made. This year we're down to fourth with 319 a game, and then be last in the league in assists. And what's really interesting is we're last in the league, second to last in the league in potential assists. So what that tells you is we take just, we make a huge amount of passes to get action moving, get the ball swinging side to side. Quinn fundamentally believes if people touch the ball, they'll defend better on the other side, even if they don't take the shot. And so you see a huge amount of that. And so there's a huge amount of action that leads to action. And the reason I think, and I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, that we are low on assists is because so much of our action then leads to a dribble handoff that is coming around for two dribbles and a pull-up jumper, or driving at the rim, or rolling Rudy to the basket. Most of our assists are on Rudy rolls, or you're making the extra pass out to three. But we end up playing kind of more off the bounce, where the system, whereas in a lot of teams, James Harden and Russell Westbrook's creating the advantage and then you're pitching it around. The Jazz, our system, is creating the advantage with a dribble handoff or some sort of pitch or some sort of action. And then the ball, then that's creating either the look or that's creating the gets the ball start moving. And there's already been a ton of action beforehand. Does that make sense or not?
Yeah, so it's built a little more around maybe what you consider like a, not, you know, not to diss it, because I think it's actually beautiful basketball, but something you consider more of like a high school or college style built on ball reversals instead of the more standard NBA style of kind of penetrate and kick.
There are not a lot of possessions where we just come up and run the high pick and roll. Like if that's like, okay, if you think about the NBA that way, you just won't see a great amount of us just coming up high pick and roll. You will see it to go get maybe Jamal Crawford, or maybe to go get Raymond Felton, right? So if they want to get Rodney Hood or Gordon Hayward in a matchup, you'll see Quinn run a lot of small pick and rolls to get a specific player matched up on a specific guy.
But not a lot of, you know, you see with the Clippers all the time, DeAndre Jordan comes up and sets the screen, Chris Paul comes off it and either looks for a mid-range jumper, looks for the lob, kicks to a shooter. The offense is on, that's almost the engine that the offense is built around. Utah, you'll see it more as a preliminary thing to set up certain matchups as they get into their action.
I think that's a good way to say it. We'll talk, how about we talk on Wednesday or Thursday, and you'll tell me whether you think whether you see it, and we'll see whether the Jazz have been able to score or not.
Absolutely, sounds good.
Okay, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that conversation between me and David Locke, again from the Locked On Jazz podcast, and he's also the radio broadcaster for the Utah Jazz. So you can go ahead and follow him at Locked On Sports. He runs this whole network of all of us who have the Locked On team podcasts. So he's a good follower, really bright basketball guy, as you could tell from that chat that we had. Now, briefly, I just want to run through the playoff series in the Western Conference and give some thoughts on each of them, how I did with the Eastern Conference series yesterday, and then we'll wrap up this episode, see how Game 1 goes this weekend, and talk again on Monday. So the one thing that David and I didn't talk about is our pick for the Clippers-Jazz series. Now, obviously we talked a lot about the matchup, so I don't have to give you the rundown on the Clippers-Jazz series. We're going to be talking about that nonstop. My pick is Clippers in 5. I think that they'll win both games at home. They'll split the games in Utah. They'll close the Jazz out in 5. They'll finally get out of a first-round series in less than 7 games. And they'll go into that second-round series against the Warriors as huge underdogs, but also it will be the healthiest and best rested they've ever been going into a second-round series. Knock on wood that they're healthy. But if they're able to take care of business against the Jazz in 5 games and they don't get bitten by the injury bug, I'm not saying that they're going to beat the Warriors. I'm just saying that this is going to be the best position they've ever been in going into the second round. And maybe we'll look back on this and say, it sucks that this happened in the year when they had such an unfortunate second round matchup. Walking through the other matchups in the West, I think Houston versus Oklahoma City in the 3-6 is going to be very compelling. Ultimately, I think Houston is the better team and just has too much offensively for Oklahoma City. One of the reasons why Oklahoma City always plays well against the Clippers is that they have so much length to bother the Clippers' smaller perimeter players. But Houston doesn't really have that problem as much because they have James Harden, who's kind of like a big, strong shooting guard, really playing point guard. So they're not going to be able to bother him with length like you can bother the 6-foot-tall Chris Paul. What will be interesting is that one of these guys, James Harden or Russell Westbrook, is probably going to be the MVP, and whoever isn't is going to be pissed about it. And it's not unrealistic that either of them could average like 40, 12, and 12 for the series. So this is going to be two real heavyweights in Harden and Westbrook going at each other. I'm going to take Houston in 6 in this series, but I think it's a really entertaining one. San Antonio is playing the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis obviously has a high upside with Conley and Marc Gasol, but they limped to the end of the season. They haven't played well against the Spurs in the past. A lot of people are saying that they think the Spurs are going to sweep this series. I'll hedge a little bit and say Spurs in 5. I think Memphis can pick up one of the games at home if they shoot the ball well enough. And Memphis, actually, interestingly enough, for a team that isn't known for its shooting, has a great record when they get hot and a not-so-great record when they don't. I think they'll get hot in at least one of these 5 games and be able to win it, but I don't think that they're going to give the Spurs the serious challenge that you might think they would on paper, because Memphis is a good physical team. They play a similar style to the Spurs where they slow the game down. And then the final series, Golden State versus Portland. I think Golden State wins this one in a sweep. I know a lot of people are saying it'll be a 5-game series because Portland can get hot, and obviously Damian Lillard plays well against the Blazers. But you look at how these teams matched up in the regular season. I think Golden State won the 4 meetings by a combined 78 points. And Golden State's just good. Golden State's just a really, really good basketball team. And I think that's why it's so important for the Clippers to get out of the first round series with the Jazz early, because Golden State's going to be getting out of this series early. Even if Portland pushes them, I really have a hard time seeing Portland take more than 1 game off of the Warriors. So those are my takes on the Western Conference playoff matchups. I really, really encourage you to stay tuned today and check out the Clips Nation blog, because I'm going to have my full series preview going up early in the morning on Clips Nation. So depending on when you're listening to this, it might be coming in a few hours. It might already be up. But it's really long, really in-depth, talking about different matchups, different things to keep an eye on. I've got notes in there from Steve Perrin, the founder of Clips Nation. There's going to be some cool graphics in there that Aditya at Brown is the Night on Twitter is putting together. And I really look forward to doing these playoff series previews, because it's a really nice in-depth article and I get to spend more time on it than a normal game preview. So I encourage you to check that out. I'm going to try to have a post up with just the various staff members of Clips Nation picking the game and who they think, or picking the series, who they think is going to win and in how many games. So I encourage you to keep checking Clips Nation at Clips Nation SBN, ClipsNation.com, Clips Nation on Facebook, and see all the cool content that we've got coming out. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can tweet at me at Lucas J. Han. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back next week with a whole new week's worth of Locked On Clippers, and hopefully the Clippers can get this win Saturday night against the Utah Jazz in Game 1.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.